In this episode, Ken Schumann and a group of faith walkers reflect on the topic of love. This conversation was originally recorded in December of 2020. We want to remind you, Faith Walking's mission is to make wholeness possible for individuals, communities, and the world. Visit us at www.faithwalking.us. That's www.faithwalking.us. Join this conversation.
I came back around to begin at the beginning. We've been talking about the different fruit of the Spirit, and we've been looking at them from a what do the words mean, and also through this lens of how do they apply in faith walking terms. And this really went different than I expected it to go. I thought I would go kind of in a different direction. That was my plan. But I'm always open to surprises, and this felt a little bit like a surprise. And so the notes today are just kind of some random thoughts about the idea of love. And I think maybe most of you will know, if not everyone will know, that there are three words for love in the Greek, and that agape is the word that is, it was not a word that was used much in typical Greek, but that the scripture writers gave it kind of a new nuance and a new depth that is really powerful and really important. And I think it's this idea, and this is what captured me in my study this week, is that love is about the worth and value of every individual human being. It's about prizing people because they are creatures created in God's image. It's a sense of preciousness, of worth, and of value. And so we love not because we have these warm feelings of friendship or necessarily whatever that might be, but we love because of the value of that individual. And so then love becomes us recognizing the preciousness of every human being, and love is about a choice that we make. Love then typically shows up as benevolence, as charity, as loving people because of who they are, not because of what they've done. And so there are a lot of different places that my mind went. Love is the antidote to polarization, and we can talk about that some. I just summed it up a little at the very end here, but I want to come back around to this idea that I think it's really, really challenging to love others until we can learn to love ourselves. And that learning to love ourselves is an ongoing journey. But I have not arrived at the place where I love myself fully and well yet. And so I have this hunch that for the vast majority of us, we have not done that as well as we can. And so what work do we need to do to help us love ourselves better? I think the work we do in faith walking is really about that. I think in faith walking, we help people learn to love themselves better so that they can love their neighbor better. And so that's kind of a big deal. I also mentioned here, and this is where I'm going to kind of spend a few moments, and then we can talk about this. We talk in faith walking about our first formation, and that's where our vows come from. That's where our shame comes from. And I got really present to this week, that sometimes the things we learn in our first formation are what get in the way of us loving others well. What do I mean by that? So let me tell you a story, and it's a bit embarrassing, but it's real, and it happened this week. So my brother-in-law, who's my oldest sister's husband, she is 8 years older than I am, so he's about 9 years older than I am, he's dying. And he was in the hospital. They yesterday moved him to hospice care. He's been sickly all of his life, and he's been particularly not doing well for the last 4 or 5 years. And it's finally come to where he's terminal. And on Monday, I was talking to my sister, called her and was just talking with her. And we were talking about all sorts of different things related to it. And she said to me, she said, "Oh, and by the way, I think I just need to be honest with you and tell you that Johnny has asked that you not do his funeral." And I said, "Okay." And she said, "And the reason he doesn't want you to do the funeral is because he doesn't think you like him. And so he doesn't want you to do his funeral." And I did not take that personal, but what I did take personal was, why does he think that? Well, part of why he thinks that is because part of that is true. I don't like him all that much. Do you have any relatives you don't like quite as much as others? And so then I began to wonder why, and why was that true? And the reason it's true is because there were several things that were really big things in my first formation. One was them, one of them, and I began to list them out. Okay, what were the really big important things? So big important thing was hard work. So in our family culture, hard work was just, I mean, that was like the first value. Second value, or maybe first above it, was a commitment to an evangelical version of Christianity for us that we learned. Integrity, your word is your bond, was a huge one. Being able to think well. So for my father, you had to have the capacity to think well, and you had to have common sense. That was a really big deal. And unfortunately, my brother-in-law didn't measure up to several of those. And as a result, I don't think my dad liked him very much. And well, in fact, I know my dad didn't like him very much because he told me so. And so then, because my dad's such an influence in my life, so then that same thing became true for me. And what I got really clear on as I was studying this was, and all of those things I learned in my first formation are really good things. But what I also learned was to be critical and judgmental of people who didn't measure up to those things that were our family's values. And that's why my brother-in-law felt like that I didn't like him. And really, it's why I didn't like him as much, because he didn't measure up in some of those ways. And so I've been asking myself the question, okay, and so how can you not do that anymore? How can you show up and love people because of their worth and because of their preciousness, because they are created in the image of God, even if I don't necessarily like them that much? And what does love even look like when we do that? And that's where my mind went, and that's been fresh on my mind, because that's going on. And so when I talk about sometimes our first formation stands in the way of us loving well, that's the story that I'm referring to, and what I'm thinking about. And I'm a bit stuck there. So as we think about this idea of love, I think about, how can I love myself better? Because the truth of the matter is, it's only been in the last 2 or 3 years that I've really started to learn to love myself better, and how that then impacts others. And then also then, and how can I get past some things that were really good in my first formation, but that ended up getting twisted into a way that create issues for me in my life. So I guess I come with a little bit of teaching and a whole lot of questions today around, how do I learn to love myself and others well? So that's what's being stirred for me today. What's that stir up for you?
Can I just have a question, whether you feel the need to somehow reconcile that with your brother-in-law?
Mm-hmm. It's a great question. I've thought about it. He's incoherent right now, and so wouldn't be able to receive it. And I'm still processing what's true in me. And what I also know is, and I want to say this out loud as well, because of my deep Baptist-y kind of roots, I have this tendency to be over responsible at times and take more responsibility for things than are truly mine. And so I'm still weighing out, okay, what really was my responsibility? Because the fact is, I don't think he liked me either, right? And so, okay, what's my responsibility? What am I going to own? And what will I do differently? I'm afraid in this case, there's not much that I can do now because it's in a poor place. But I did think about that. So it's a great question. Somebody's trying to coach me today. You hear that coaching come in? Tammy.
Don't you suppose it's okay to not like people but still love their humanity, their
Absolutely.
Image of God? I was
Absolutely.
Thinking of Jesus and all the religious people that really mm-hmm. kicked him off to no mm-hmm. end. Mm-hmm. And not just behavior, but they did, I don't think he liked them. But
right.
he could still love them as their creator and as Father God would.
Yeah.
And weighing those two in how we respond to people, how to authentically do
right.
that.
Yeah, absolutely. I totally believe that, Tammy. And I think the thing that I'm mostly present to is that a piece that is not very attractive from my first formation was this idea that it wasn't just, okay, I dislike you, but that I kind of judge, criticize, and condemn you because you don't measure up to these family values that got passed down. And I don't like that about myself. That's the part that I'm trying to learn. So yeah, I definitely believe there's lots of folks we won't like, but how can we love them in the midst of that? Go ahead, teach me.
No. That's where I was going to go. How do you get past that and stay true to your values and be authentically you, but still demonstrate a father's heart?
I
don't know.
Yeah, I think that's the question. So here's what I believe about that. I believe that we develop more and more capacity to do that as we grow in our level of differentiation or emotional maturity. So the more the way I understand self-differentiation, it's I get to be me. I get to stand for what I stand for, believe in what I believe, but I also allow you to be you, even when that's really different than it is for me. And in my first formation, I realized I grew up in a family that was not very well differentiated. And so that ongoing journey. And so I think it, and I'm processing out loud, but I think what it enables me to do, it's beginning to enable me to do, is to love people better because I am growing also in my differentiation of self.
And yeah, I come back all the time to defined but connected, defined mm-hmm. and connected
right.
as a faith walking mantra.
Mm-hmm.
Staying
yeah,
together.
I heard. I've got hands everywhere and people unmuted everywhere. Can I go to Tricia next, and then Mags, and then Deborah?
I was thinking about what it was like for your sister to have the sense that you didn't care for her husband, since the both of you grew up in the same family dynamic, and you may not be able to work with her husband. But I was wondering what it was like for your sister.
Yeah, I think that's a great question, Tricia, and I think it's a question that I will need to explore more. We talked about that a little bit, and you know how you do when you're in a conversation. I made as if, oh, that's not true. The reality is, though, when I'm really gut honest, it is true. And so, okay, what does that mean? So it opens the can of worms for this idea that also we teach in faith walking, folks, about meaning making, that we make up meanings in our head of what we think people believe. Anyway, I hear you, and that's a conversation I need to have. Mags.
Okay. Thank you for sharing that and being so vulnerable, Ken. You say that your brother-in-law is incoherent at the moment. He wouldn't receive from you. But if he wasn't incoherent, what do you think you would do now?
I don't have a clue, Mags. So hear me, folks. I want to be the best version of me I can be, but I also can only be as good as I can be today. You understand what I'm saying?
Yeah.
I'm not sure I have the capacity right now to go have that conversation with him, even if he was coherent.
Okay. It just strikes me that you just made reference to, we have a great capacity to put meaning to what mm-hmm. we are thinking of in our heads.
Right.
Because there's always more than one side to a story.
Absolutely.
And, you always. If your brother-in-law was able to, he could bring the other side. And sometimes I just feel for myself, just speaking for myself, it's just a matter of saying what it is and mm-hmm. acknowledging that you need help with that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, but yeah, bless you. You've got a lot of thinking to do.
Thanks, Mags.
Yeah.
Deborah.
Yeah, as you were talking, it brought up for me something I'd heard years ago that rang true. It's just hard to walk in. And that is, sometimes I think I'm putting this on the table, so bear with me as I try to find the right words, that sometimes in our religious upbringing, our spiritual first formation, also formation we might have gotten in the church, religious formation.
Mm-hmm.
pressures us to be nicer than Jesus.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a false pressure that we don't have to reconcile everybody before they die. Mm-hmm. Sometimes we just cannot. And I'm just tying that to the scripture that mm-hmm. says, as far as possible, be at peace. As far mm-hmm. as it depends on you, be at peace with all men.
Mm-hmm.
But I will never be able to reconcile with my mother.
Mm-hmm.
And I've had to wrestle with that in my heart that I can't be nicer than Jesus to her.
Right.
Because that'll trigger my overfunction, which it did for decades. And to let it go and become more differentiated from her emotional tentacles.
Mm-hmm.
was real important for me to start finding my own peace and my choices.
Right.
In the Lord. So I'm just popping that on the table.
Yeah,
you
no,
heard
I.
That before? Don't be nicer than Jesus?
Yeah, no, I haven't. That's the first time I've heard that phrase. I wrote it down. I really like it. And the truth is, I mean, as I'm thinking about it, I was never ugly to my brother-in-law. We never spoke ugly to one another. We don't have a broken relationship. I just don't care for him that much. And so, so I'm not completely sure that there's a lot of work that needs to be done. Maria, and then we're going to go to small groups, okay? Is that all right? Courtney, Maria and Courtney, and then small groups. Go, Maria.
I love this group. I love the questions. I'm learning about myself. I'm learning about coaching, questions. I mean, the modeling that just went on is fascinating to me. And it brings up a lot of questions, you know, because the differentiation, what Deborah just said, the differentiation thing of Jesus wasn't always nice. You know, he said what is so, period.
Right. Truth,
whether it feels good or not, the truth is truth. So I love that. And I have a question about that came up about, you know how kids can sense, I know my kids could sense when a teacher didn't like them, no matter what the teacher said or how much she liked them, and they couldn't work with them because they knew they weren't liked. You know, that sort of,
yeah,
how powerful that is when we know someone doesn't like us, even though they say that, you know, and is it really good for them to say, no, I really do like you. Just that whole sense of, you know, we love because Jesus first loved us. So I wonder how that goes on between relationships, you know?
Yeah.
Because you loved me first, sort of.
Right.
I don't know, whole dynamic. And then, the question of protection of your sister. I know for me with my sister and the feelings with her husband, it has a lot to do with I'm wanting to protect my sister as my first formation would have protected my sister.
Right.
You know, I'm taking on that role of I'm my sister's protector. And therefore, if he's doing something that is not right in my values, that may be good values, but I've taken them a little too far on this one. And so that's why I really like this whole thing of seeing them as a broken human.
Yeah.
And not as your sister's husband.
Right. Exactly.
To make the shift. And how much is it my sister's responsibility and not his responsibility to be good to her? You know, so there's so many dynamics that just flew out from everything y'all said. I could just like go on this forever. And I know that until I'm spend some solitude, which I just learned this year, and get in his presence, I can't see truth. And I can't feel truth for a person. And like take it to him and just listen and swallow my tongue.
Yeah.
Because he is convicting.
Mm-hmm.
In a good way. In a good
way. Yep.
Anyway.
That was and clarifying. Yeah.
Thank
you. I mean, the spirit clarifies for us. Absolutely. Courtney. Thanks.
Yeah. Thank you, Ken, for sharing that. I think it was really helpful and shed some light on kind of what I've been thinking about recently, because I've just been really, really aware of like the negative self-talk towards me and the amount of shame that I feel like I'm just constantly in, and my lack of love for myself. And I'm aware that a lot of it does come from standards, and I can almost hear my dad's voice with some of those standards because they're just so black and white and right and wrong and, you know, zero to 100 all the time. And I think it's really helpful because, you know, I've can identify that there's definitely standards I'm holding myself to that are ridiculous, but then also aware of standards that I hold towards other people. And I think it was really helpful to put that in that sort of light of how our first formation affects kind of the standards that we then put on other people. Like, you know, achieving is this, and like everyone should be hospitable in this, and all of these things. And so it's really helpful because I think a lot of ways that I relate to people, you know, I get frustrated by the fact that I'm like, why don't I like that person? I don't like that person either. I don't like that person either. I don't like anybody, you know what? And I think it's because I'm like, oh, actually, they aren't meeting up to the standards that I've created. And maybe, I think it's easy, it's like helpful because I'm like, maybe I can separate the person from the expectations I have for myself that of how life should be and like how you should live.
Right.
And maybe that will make it easier for me to then not just, I mean, to like that person because they're living in a different reality than the reality, the kind of perception reality that I'm sitting in.
Right.
You know? Like, then can see more clearly on actually the way that they are image bearers and the way that they do life and the way that they look at it and how it's helpful and the things that they're good at, that I'm so tunnel vision against seeing, because I've mm-hmm. never, those values have never been impressed on me, but they're obviously really important for them. So it's like, if mm-hmm. I can remove those standards, I can actually probably like people better than I do right now, which I think is really freeing and hopeful. And also, again, another sort of element of kind of working on myself and being able to set aside standards and seeing what I actually value, what's important to me, that is how God created me, than what verse formations have put on me as the right way of being.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's constantly a challenge and a battle. And I think it's an important part of our growth process. Yeah. Well articulated. Thank you, Courtney. Well, so I'm going to divide us into some small groups. Let's talk about it in small groups. Let's go for about 20 minutes. So we'll come back together at 11:30 my time. And when we do that, then let's debrief a little more together. I've got a little extra time today, so we can be here a few extra minutes. You ready for that? All right.
I wanted to tell Brenda that I so appreciated that comment she put in her faith walking stuff that she put in there about, do not confuse the command to love with the disease to please. I have been thinking about that all week, and it's just stayed in my mind, and it was so freeing and so helpful.
Yeah, I think something that came up in our group, Ken, if I can share it, is I think the best way I can put it is that when we see, as you had described in your circumstance, people that don't seem to have the values that you had, you were given in your first formation. It's like you go into that, if you want to call it a relationship, almost like a horse with blinkers, because you see what you want to see. And then you think, I don't really like it that much because it doesn't match with what I've been taught and what's ingrained in me. So you don't hang around too long, mm-hmm. and you're not rude. You just don't hang around too long, and you mm-hmm. think, no, that person's not for me. But the opportunity, I believe that one would miss by not hanging around. And believe me, I've not hung around too. So, you know, mea culpa, is the chance to understand, what do they have? And Courtney touched on this. What do they have that they got from their first formation that mm-hmm. is of value that mm-hmm. they can bring to the table,
right,
that maybe would enlighten me too, you mm-hmm. know? Mm-hmm. So you miss that serendipitous opportunity by not hanging around. That's very simply put.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, good. Thank you, Mags.
Welcome.
Well, that's what we were talking about in our group, is perspective. You know, my prayer lately is, God, give me the perspective to see what you see in others, but also give me the perspective to see what you see in me, because it's very difficult. Ken's, your story was so close to something, a lot of things that I've experienced this week, and it hit me. I mean, I'm glad you shared it, because it is difficult to rectify something with somebody that either refuses to rectify with you, or is, you're not able to. There's just no way of mm-hmm. rectifying, or if you're even able to rectify. I mean, mm-hmm. able within yourself to do that.
Right.
And so it's what I shared in our group today is, you know, the liking and love thing. You know, there's a lot of people I don't like personally, family or non-family, but I'm still trying to choose to love. But what I struggle with is, I want to feel it. I mean, just feel it, not just do an act of love, but mm-hmm. deep down inside, be able to do that at all times. So I don't even know if that's possible.
Right. I'm not sure it is, Brenda. I'm not sure it is, but I hear you. Good. Deborah.
Yeah, that just kind of brings up to me that bit of a struggle with stay differentiated, but connected. Mm-hmm. Connected is an operative word that, I think doesn't mean we're nicer than Jesus. Mm-hmm. Oh, we've got to do something that is impossible. I'm, mm-hmm. And I'm not sure I can put words on what does it mean to stay connected when you can't be heart connected?
Mm-hmm.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, of course.
Go ahead and answer my question.
I wished I knew. I'm still learning myself. Yeah. So, but I think it's a great distinction, Deborah, that staying connected doesn't mean I feel warm toward them, or that I feel close to them, or that I even have warm, fuzzy feelings about them. Staying connected is just staying connected. So can I be in relationship? Can I have conversation with? Can I show up and be in the same room as? You know, those are the kinds of things that for me emerge around the idea of connection. And I think sometimes we think, oh, that means I'm supposed to be close. I have to feel close to them. And I don't think that's possible. I think there are people we're just not close to.
Yeah, well, you don't seek them out. So staying connected to me doesn't mean I seek them out for fellowship, or I seek them out to spend time with them.
Right.
Okay.
True. Yeah.
I just don't write them off. I just don't write them out.
Right. Okay. So we'll use my brother-in-law as the example. Could I call him on the phone and him answer the phone and us have a conversation? That's connected.
Yeah. Okay. Got it.
Makes
sense.
Yeah. And so it's this increasing. And this is my understanding of growing and differentiation. And trust me, I've got a long way to go. But differentiation, it's this growing capacity, the increasing capacity for me to show up and be fully me and connected to you, let you be fully you, and we don't have to agree on everything. Or we don't even have to like each other. But I can show up and be fully me and stay connected in relationship with you because it's an important relationship in my life.
I'm going to hang that banner over my front door.
Yeah, they might not be an important relationship in my life, but I've got to respect the Imago Dei.
Mm-hmm. The image
and
of God
my
in them.
Emotional,
sure.
My emotional immaturity shows up when I can't be in the same room with that person. Mm-hmm. For my own healthy boundaries, mm-hmm. if there is not only just not even a heart connection, let alone a bare tolerance of their humanity, I have people that they're gone and I'm a master at cutoff.
Right.
But that's where my own immaturity shows up and I know it and I'll work on it and maybe eventually they'll be allowed back in the room. Mm-hmm. But we have to draw those boundaries with where we are in our own journey. And sometimes that does mean shutting down.
Exactly true, Tammy. Or it may mean I don't say everything I would like to say in this moment. So a couple of weekends ago, we were at my father-in-law's. He's an 88-year-old retired, ultra-conservative Southern Baptist pastor. Okay. And he said some things that just got all over my wife and I, Becky and I. But at the same time, so two things occurred. One was, I didn't have the courage to say anything different. Okay. And second, I'm not sure it would do any good anyway, but I can still show up and go visit him.
Right.
Right. Knowing, okay, he sees some things and believes some things really, really different than I do. And who knows whether he's right or wrong. I think he's wrong, but that doesn't matter. It's not about right or wrong. But can I show up and love him as the person created in the image of God that I believe he is?
That's awesome, because that picture right there distinguishes for me maturity and immaturity in our development. To not say something because it's a demonstration of love is maturity. To not say something because you don't have the courage to is an immaturity. They both have the same effect, but where it's coming from in you is different.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Exactly. And so another way to say that, Tammy, that I say all the time is I cannot say something as a reaction to my own anxiety, giving up self because I'm just not mature enough. And that happens frequently. Or I cannot say something as a choice based on my best thinking. And for me, my best thinking is, okay, as an act of love, I just choose not to say anything. And that's really different than not doing it because I'm afraid to. Couple of other hands I saw. Dawn, were you on? Yeah, go, Dawn.
Yeah, just a comment. I think the faith walking community is the only place I'm hearing that this part of self-differentiation. I don't hear this anywhere else. So it's an awesome thing to talk about and to explore. And so that it makes it, you know, I often share that with the people as I'm talking, if you get a chance to, if I get a chance to. But I think it's just a really unique perspective. So I really appreciate it.
Which part? Tell me which part you're referring to.
Well, I think the second part, staying connected. We're all told, be you, do what you want to do. Yeah. Don't worry about anybody else. It's just all about you. And we don't get the second part.
Yeah.
And then my second piece to this is that I think for me, and this is probably, I'm probably going past a boundary or an expectation of myself. I feel like in order to show that I am staying connected, I need to make sure that the other person knows that I value and love them. That their perception of me is that I'm not judging them, that I'm wanting to stay connected to them. But maybe that's too far. Maybe that is unrealistic of me to want that feeling from them coming back at me, or their understanding of what I'm trying to give them. That might be over the top of what my responsibility is.
But you brought it into that so you're right. That's boundaries. What's my responsibility? What's not my responsibility? Yeah, exactly. That's all I'm going to say. Trish.
I think there's so many things going through my head right now, but sometimes the real challenge for me is showing up, staying connected, and in a situation where it may not, or I may not feel emotionally safe. Mm-hmm. And so in those situations, I, like Tammy, I would be like, distance, cut off. But I've had a specific friendship that has come up again with a person that I've known for like 35 years. And at one time we were really close, but our lives have taken very divergent ways. And in still trying to stay connected with that person can be very challenging for me. And so I guess amidst it, whenever I have contact with her, it's becoming more aware of what my boundaries should be. Like, mm-hmm. I don't want to write off somebody that I've known for so long and her family and all of that. But often her comments will bring stuff up in me. And it's just, I know it's just a work in progress. But I have found over the last few years that the more I discover about who God created me to be and who He says I am, and I'm more confident leaning into that. Mm-hmm. He is a safe place for me in that. And in leaning into those areas of who I am and not feeling like I have to be something different from other people.
Correct.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's also about capacity. What do I have the capacity to do?
That's a good point.
So I know I ought to do a whole lot of things that I just don't have the capacity yet to do, but I'm growing in my capacity. My capacity is getting bigger. The other thing I think I would say, Trish, is the idea that we don't have capacity to stay connected to everybody in the world.
No.
We just don't have capacity for that. So it's about, okay, I think family systems teaches us it's really important to stay connected to my family of origin. Mm-hmm. That's vital. It's important to stay connected to the important relationships in my life. Mm-hmm. Vitally important. And it's important to stay connected to any person that I hope to have influence over and lead. So if I'm a leader in any capacity, small group, big group, if I'm going to lead people, I must be connected to them or else I lose influence over them. So for me, those are the three criteria I measure. Okay, is it my family? Is it an important relationship? Or is it someone I hope to lead? Then those are like, those are the necessities. Okay, you've got to stay connected to those folks. If they're not in that category, then I evaluate by saying, okay, do I have the capacity to stay connected to this person or not? And I like all of you, there are some folks that, okay, you know what? I just don't have the capacity to stay connected right now. And I'm cutting you off. And because that's about my own maturity and growth.
Thank you. That's helpful.
Yeah. Trish, I'm really glad that you brought that up. And I just, for my own self, I have a son that I am barely connected with because, I mean, I've shared this with Deborah. Deborah knows about this. And I'm so grateful that she was a listener and holding my story. My son, I cannot even bring myself to phone him. I can't use Messenger much with him, mm-hmm. Because he's quite toxic. Mm-hmm. He's accused me of, I needed to come out into the light. So he's seen dark as light. There's a whole bunch of stuff in there.
Yeah. But
he's family, Ken, and I can barely connect with him because the way he comes at me verbally,
yeah.
It's a verbal violence that I have yeah. to guard my emotions.
Absolutely. And absolutely.
I've been able to say, these are my boundaries.
Good, and, Max.
And I've had the words with him and said, mm-hmm. I'm stepping back now.
Mm-hmm.
But do I feel good about it? I feel at peace. Yeah, mm-hmm. I feel at peace because I know I'm not going to have that anxiety that that rises up in me when he starts on me. But do I feel good about it? No, I feel dreadful about it because sure. he's my son and I really love him.
Yeah.
So that's something I'm hoping Faith Walking, you know, all the modules will just help you walk through this. You
yeah,
know?
It will help you, Mags. I do want to add a piece, and Deborah, we're going to get to you, okay? But here's the piece I want to add. So come back to that idea of, am I doing this based on my anxiety, or am I doing it based on my best thinking? Sometimes my best thinking says, I've got to create a really tight boundary
yeah.
to keep myself safe. So I have my second oldest sister. I barely have a connection with. And the reason I barely have a connection with is because her husband sexually molested my baby sister and has never come clean with that. You know, we finally got it out in the light and the whole family knows. But my boundary is, and I can never have a relationship with you until you come clean, until you acknowledge what's occurred here. And so is it anywhere near where I, no, but that boundary for me, Mags, is intentional. Yeah. That's yeah. based on my best thinking.
Yeah.
Is it disappointing? It is. Is it frustrating? Do I feel tons of guilt constantly that I don't need to feel because, oh my gosh, I feel guilty because I'm not close to my, yeah, I've got to work my way through all of that. Because there are times when a really healthy boundary is what's required.
Yeah, thank you, Ken. And thank you for sharing that. I appreciate it. And yeah, I was getting a little sort of anxious about stuff listening
yeah.
to you guys talk.
Yeah.
But thank you. You've sort of calmed that down a bit. And
good. Yeah. I'm so glad, Mags. Don't want you to leave anxious. Deb, Deborah.
Yeah, just the last thing that you were talking about, capacity. Mm-hmm. Just as you were thinking, that started coming up for me that, honestly, I only have so many watts of energy per day.
Correct.
Per week. And I can't overfunction because that's my, I just love that pathway of mm-hmm. overfunctioning. Mm-hmm. I just think it's wonderful. I think my flesh thinks it's great, but it just wears me out and I just can't. So that kind of dictates that. And my right. circles would be different than yours. Mine would not be natural family.
Right. Yeah.
Because they taught me to not make, we don't make family the most important.
Mm-hmm.
Gotcha. My dad did it, but once he died, it all just kind of.
Yeah.
You know, fell apart. Probably my closest relative is my older brother, whom I talked to the small group about. We're probably the closest. But
yeah,
it is okay to have our circles be different, isn't it?
Absolutely. Sure it
but
is.
My priority is not natural family.
Sure. I think the idea is within family systems, this is my understanding of it, is that we will make the most progress in our own differentiation if we can remain connected to our families of origin and be completely who we are with them in their presence. So that then it happens in other relationships. And for some of us, we may not be at the place where we can go be that right now. So once again, group, I firmly believe, so we keep holding up the vision. Okay, yeah, I want to be fully differentiated, but here's the bottom line. But I can only do as good as I can do today.
That's good.
That's all I can do. Good. And so giving ourselves permission not to beat ourselves up when this is the best I can do. Awesome. One final little piece I want to, because it came up. So 20 years ago, 25 years ago, I was doing some work on my D-Men, and it was about relationships. And this picture really helped me. Something that I found in my study was around the capacity that people have for relationships. And it said to envision yourself like a Lego. Y'all all know what Legos are? They have like six little prongs. When all the prongs get full, there's no more room.
Right.
All of us have limited prongs. We have limited capacity for relationships. And so it's just realizing, you know what? I don't have time for that relationship right now because I'm full. And that's okay. Gang, this has been fantastic conversation. Thank you for hanging in late with me. Hopefully it's been good. We'll be back again next Friday. I hope you have a good weekend.
For more information about Faith Walking, visit us at www.faithwalking.us. We want to remind you that Faith Walking exists because of your financial support. Please consider giving at faithwalking.us/donate. Thank you for listening.